So thank you very much for inviting me. Before I start talking about what I've been assigned to talk about, I want to talk about a couple other things. So first, on Saturday, the health insurance marketplace is opened again and will be open till February 15th. So we have a huge obligation here to enroll people in health insurance during this period. And although there's no national data, by calculation, we believe there are about 7 million people with behavioral health conditions who remain to be enrolled. It's a huge number. And virtually everybody sitting in this room should take on the obligation of going out and enrolling at least one person in this period. And there's a long discussion and talk we could have about the Affordable Care Act and health insurance marketplaces and Medicaid expansion, which we don't need to go into here. We just need to go out there and get these people enrolled. So my message here, I also have a little handout if you're interested. I'll give you a handout on this. One final comment on this. HHS also has a new document called A Roadmap to Better Care and a Healthier You. So once you have insurance, first step in here, it's an 8-step process. Step one is getting insurance. Steps 2 through 8 are about how you get a primary care provider, how you work with that primary care provider, and how you find out how you can get yourself engaged in not only disease care, but also health care. So you should know that this is also available. My second comment that's only partly related, I want to congratulate the mental health section for the policy brief that the section did. If you don't know what the policy brief is, Dave Shern is sitting right here. Dave and Jennifer Magnabosco and others spent 2 years developing a policy brief that focuses specifically on prevention, health promotion, and the social determinants of health and the actions that need to be taken. And I assume there'll be more discussion of that here. Okay, so let me now go to what I intend to talk about here. So before I do my first case, just say something to follow on the previous talk. So if you tell me you were born in poverty, I'm going to subtract 5 years off your life. If you also tell me you didn't graduate from high school, I'm going to subtract another 4 years off your life. If you tell me you have depression, I'm going to take another 5. I've taken 14 years off your life on just those 3 variables. Then if you tell me you were treated in the public mental health system, I'm going to take another 11 years off your life. I've taken 25 years off your life, and we have data to document that this actually happens. Most of these variables that are affecting you have nothing to do with the healthcare system. They have to do with your social class, they have to do with your educational level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We can easily document the case that was just made. So a couple of examples here. 616,000 people a year die from a heart disease or a stroke. A third of those people are people with primary behavioral health conditions. So in the course of 5 years, we will have 1 million people with behavioral health conditions dying of a heart attack or a stroke. 50 million Americans live in poverty. The rate of mental illness in this group is 8 times what it is among the wealthiest. And this is not a new finding. If you go back to Hollingshead and Redlich in 1958, we knew this in 1958. Redlich redid the study 40 years later, and he replicated the finding exactly. This has not changed, basically. To remake the point that was just made, the system is disease care focused. 96% of every dollar gets spent on disease. Actually, less than 4 cents on each dollar gets spent on prevention and promotion. So we are reaching people when they're in stage 4 of cancer equivalency. That's true with the behavioral health system. Where we are, we're at about $2.6 trillion. We're on our way to $3.4 trillion or $4.6 trillion by 2020. So you have to ask yourself, are we ever going to be able to get there? We're in a system that is failing, because its focus is on fourth stage cancer, basically. The overall health status of our population is poor. CDC had to change the standards for obesity and raise them because too many people met the old standard. That's very telling. The disease care system is laboring to stand in place, it's obvious, and the costs continue to soar here. Berwick proposed a new vision, you all know this, better population health, better quality health care, reduced costs, which we now know as the triple aim. The three are interdependent. They can be connected through several pathways, and I'm just going to go briefly through one of the pathways. I think the first among equals, which is the point made in the last talk, is you start with better population health. You don't start down in the treatment system. What's the logic of starting there? Your life chances influence your health and illness. Your life chances influence your health care access, and your life chances influence your life in the community. Where do your life chances come from? They come from the social and physical determinants of health. What is a social determinant? Short definition, the cultural, social, economic, health, and environmental conditions that influence one's life chances, including one's future physical and behavioral health. What are some examples of these? I cited poverty before. Poverty, 8 times the rate. Discrimination and social exclusion, adverse and traumatic events. Poor quality education, lack of access to quality health care, little or no access to healthy foods. Abundant access to fructose and fatty foods. You can go downstairs and buy a lot of fructose at lunchtime here. Culture that promotes smoking, excessive drinking, drug use, and poor eating habits. We have 100 people a day who die from drug overdoses. Huge issue. Positive social determinants, the reverse. Community social supports and inclusion. The best antidote for stigma is social inclusion. We need to do that. A nurturing and supportive family for children and adults, good health education, positive role models, and opportunity structures in communities. It's obvious that the vast majority of adults with serious mental illness and youth with SED have an overabundance of negative social determinants and a paucity of positive social determinants. Negative social determinants cause trauma. Trauma causes mental illness and addiction. 75% of mental illness is due to trauma and the links. So if you live in poverty, you're going to have many more traumas, physical, sexual, emotional, social traumas. Those traumas then will take their toll. Some examples of what I'm talking about here. So here's heart disease, diabetes, and cancer in the U.S. and the U.K. Every case, the situation is worse in the U.S. And every case, with the exception of the U.S. for cancer, the poorest do worst. The green bar is the poorest in every case. So the pattern is consistent between the U.S. and the U.K., but the U.S. does worse, and the poorest do worst of all here. So you have to ask, why is the system different between the U.S. and the U.K., and why do the poorest do worse? Another example of that, life expectancy at age 25, by educational level. So the less education you have, the less period of time you will live here. So men, 47.9 for those who didn't complete high school versus 54.7 for people who did. Women, 53.4 and 58.5. Another example of this, differences by SES. So you have 3 time points and 10 levels of income here. The poorest on the left, the wealthiest on the right. Everybody improved across these 3 periods, but the wealthiest improved most. So if you actually look at these bars on the right, the difference from here to here versus the difference from here to here, this is over 3 years, this is less than 2 years. So what's happening over time? The relative situation of the poor is getting worse. Creating a culture of health. Implementing disease prevention and health promotion early in life and continuing over the life course, and you all know this from what we've talked about, engage in early recognition of the signs and symptoms of mental illness and substance use. So one level is preventing schizophrenia. The second level is treating schizophrenia early. If it's treated early, it will become less severe for most people. And providing training to people to be able to recognize these signs and symptoms so they know what they can do about it. We need social media tools. There are now beginning to be phone apps to help with these types of things. Don't have time to go into that. Behavioral health leaders will need to adopt the practices and tools of public health to improve the social determinants of health and population health. Three levels to intervene. You can intervene at the policy level. You can intervene at the community or population level, and you can intervene at the person level. We need to do all three. I'm going to show you this briefly, but not go through it. This is Sir Michael Marmot's model of how you go about doing this. And you see these goals that he sets in communities. Give every child the best start in life. Very important. Don't have time to go through it. Happy to discuss it with you. Second among equals is improving health here in using better quality health care. Leave you with the idea here that health and illness are not two ends of the same continuum. They are two different continua. Shown here, you start with people over here, high morbidity and mortality. You can go horizontally and do biopsychosocial interventions. You can go vertically and do social interventions to improve health and healthy outlook. You need to do both if you're going to move into this cell. Let me go ahead here. So if you take that same idea and you apply it to prevention, so we are over here, we're stage four cancer people. How are we going to move up here? You're going to move up here by doing wellness type interventions. You're going to move over here by doing disease prevention, and a whole new vision here in the future is working with people who don't have any behavioral health condition at all. Now, there's not a single person in this room, there's not a single person in the section who works with people who don't have any behavioral health condition. That has never been true. This is where we're going in the future in the Affordable Care Act. So let me then conclude by saying just a few words about how this relates to the Affordable Care Act. So the Affordable Care Act has an essential health benefit. The essential health benefit has 10 sub-benefits. One of those benefits is a mandatory benefit on disease prevention and health promotion. And for behavioral health, the cupboard is pretty bare in terms of what we have in that cell. So we have a huge amount of work to do to develop prevention and early intervention protocols, and as well as positive health promotion and positive health promotion protocols going forward here. And all the researchers in the room have a huge agenda of helping us do that. Now, as that develops, that's not going to come through SAMHSA. That's going to come through the Centers for Disease Control. And they have at the Centers for Disease Control, which is called a Community Prevention Guide and a Clinical Prevention Guide. You need to become familiar with those because they're going to be the tools that are used. And CDC also has a Prevention and Wellness Fund, which will be used to fund that work. So I'm going to stop there, and thank you very much here.